podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
You're in.
You fucking idiot. You've just let me into your Amazon account. What are you thinking?
I figured it might be fun.
Well, okay. Well, let's record it and see what happens. Hello, it's my mate Bought a Toaster, and joining me today, a fabulous comedian who is also, I mean, I'm not going to lie to you, Suze, you're kind of the queen of my Twitter. The first thing I do every day is get up and like and retweet your tweets.
Thank you. Keep it up.
I will, mate. I absolutely will. That is the voice of Suze Kempner, who has let me into her Amazon account. Suze, you absolute idiot. What were you thinking?
I don't know. I just wanted everyone to see how many wigs I bought.
And also, are we going to discover a lot of Queen merch, obviously, because you've got your Queen podcast?
You probably will, actually. Yeah, thinking about it. I swear that's where I... Because, like, problem with Amazon is... It's right there. I have described Amazon as it allows us, Amazon Prime allows us all to live the lifestyle of a rich man in the 1920s. Because yes. Now you just go, I want this thing, and you can just have it the yes. next day.
Yes. That basically, Ask Jeeves came along and tried to be that. And it was like, no, mate, that's just a brand.
Yeah.
Now we genuinely do have a Jeeves on our hands. It's so fucking true.
It's and like, you know, despicable company and all that, but oh, it done off, get there quick.
Oh, mate, done it. Do you know what? This morning I did a little Amazon Fresh. Have you ever indulged in a little Amazon Fresh?
No, what's that, like groceries?
Yeah, groceries. So I was sitting at the table at 7:30 this morning, shouting through to various members of my family, do you need more Weetabix? I said, do you want more Weetabix? And it's arriving in about an hour.
Oh, that's crazy. So it literally gets there same day.
Yeah, man.
Oh, mate.
You see what businesses can do when they don't pay any tax. It really streamlines.
It does, doesn't
it? Ooh. Really good. So the first thing I notice, Susan, this does tell us that you are living in the 1920s. I can see buy it again. And that kind of reveals the current Susan Kempner, the two things it suggests you buy again. One is LA Pacific Enzyme Teeth Whitening Toothpaste.
Oh, yeah. I've bought that a couple of times.
And the other... is raspberry flavoured vodka.
Oh, so it want me to buy that again?
It thinks you need some.
I mean, I've only had a bit of the one I've got. And I've had it for like 2 weeks. So.
Well, obviously it's based on previous consumption of vodka and it assumes you need a new one every 2 days.
Oh, wow. Well, look, I will hold off until I finish the current bottle of Absolut raspberry vodka.
All right, well, we'll get to that. We'll get to the vodka.
Okay.
Feel free to sip on some raspberry flavoured vodka as we go.
Sure, I know it's 11 a.m. I haven't got any in directly in front of me, but I do have a bottle of Creme de Menthe.
Yeah.
I'll start
Lovely.
That. Hang on, I'll open it. I'll do some ASMR. Open it on the.
Oh,
there you go. Hello, I'm going to drink Creme de Menthe directly out of a bottle now.
That was kind of ASMR done by a witch.
If the shoe fits.
Right, so we are going back in time. Right, we're going to 2000. And are you genuinely drinking now? By the way,
yeah, I did just have a bit. I didn't like it. Yeah, Creme de Menthe for 11 a.m. Good stuff and all. It's not the green stuff; it's the clear stuff. Apparently, clear better.
Is it sort of Creme de Menthe? Does it slip into the Bailey's camp? Because that's where I'm living in the Bailey's camp.
Ah, no, it's basically it's clear like vodka, but it tastes like sweet mint.
Right. Oh my god.
But not sweet enough.
It's sort of a combination of your two products, the toothpaste and the vodka.
That's true. Oh my God. Buy it again.
There you go. Saving you money
and
keeping your teeth clean.
Yeah.
Listen, 2008, 1st of October 2008, you have bought a Man of No Importance vocal selections. This is for the piano, vocal and chords. Because this points straight away, of course, to your musical background.
That would have been a gift for my brother.
Lovely.
So is that the first thing I ever bought
the
on
first
Amazon?
Thing you bought?
Yeah, that's the that 2008, bloody hell. Yeah, that was the first thing I ever bought and it was a gift from my brother.
And why was it a gift for your brother? Why were you buying him that? Is it into his music?
Yeah, he's a singer as well. He used to do musical theatre. He was doing that before he was doing comedy. So yeah, he'd still been doing musical theatre then, probably needed that score.
There you go.
So I got it for him.
Ah, so did you grow up in a very musical house? Then? Your brother's musical as well.
One could say I did. Yes, we do. Yeah, lots of singing and playing bad piano. We're really bad pianists in my house.
Oh, really?
We ever go, but we're bad at it. Like, just naturally terrible at playing piano. But we owned a keyboard, so a lot of hammering of it went on.
It is, you know, that is the whole point of being... That's basically what self-taught means, isn't it? Just being as shonky as you can for as long as you can, and then
that's
accidentally
it.
Getting good one
Do you know
day.
What, though? We had lessons as a kid, which, oh God, it gives the impression... We had piano lessons as children. They were like cheapo lessons from a woman who lived in the next town and didn't do grades or anything. But I have a feeling she was quite a crap teacher, actually, because we're both bad pianists.
That's what happens when you get cheap lessons. I used to Skype my piano lessons.
Oh, how did you manage that?
I just didn't go. I'd stay because it was a case of leaving a normal class to go and have a piano lesson elsewhere.
Oh, I see. Good. Well, how old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, I'm 40 fucking years old.
Oh, okay. So, like, so I'm 36. So we grew up when, so like, oh, let me think. So that would mean you were at school... No, actually, it would have been pre.
This is live
Labour.
Maths. Live maths. Live maths. So I was, do you know what? I was, when I was at school, I was 17 when New Labour arrived on the scene. And you must have been about, 12?
12. I was 12. Yeah. Right. And it was like, I don't have that many nice things about say about Tony Blair, but the education system improved so much. And there was loads of music. And there was loads of money in music and drama at school. So I got free. Singing lessons when I was about 14. They were free.
Really?
Yeah, they were like subsidized by your taxes. So you're welcome, everybody.
So technically, this huge career that you've built around singing and music, you can't, that's, we did that for you.
Yeah, it all started with New Labour and the taxpayer. Thanks, guys.
Oh my God.
Should have put the money in Trident. Blow me up.
I sort of feel like I was about to say the state should have a percentage of your income, but I guess that's tax.
Yeah, that's my tax. So, I pay that. Also, yeah. I don't earn very much, so should have done better, shouldn't you, New Labour? Boop, boop, boop. Sorry, I've had some creme de menthe. Might have a little bit more.
Just burning John Prescott live on my maple toaster.
Yum, yum, yum. John Prescott, he's my favourite one.
Yeah, well, he was old Labour, wasn't he? Proper.
Yeah, exactly. He was there on the front bench saying, I say what I like and I like what I bloody well say.
And I will punch people.
Two jabs.
Two jabs. Brilliant. Yeah. Absolute genius. Okay, let's move on now to 2009.
Okay.
Suze.
God, was I buying stuff in 2009?
Yes, you were, and you absolutely smashed it. This is brilliant. Okay. Now, this writer has come to the fore recently. Various people have started speaking about her, as they should, as being a genuine genius, and she should be in the canon, and she should be taught in schools, because she is a genius, right?
Yeah.
Jilly Cooper.
Oh, did I buy some Jilly Cooper books?
Dude.
Did you say 2009?
Dude, you bought Polo, Score, Rivals, and Appassionata.
Ah, that's weird. I know what this is. 2009. Was it like November-ish, 2009?
I'm going to tell you, it was the 13th of November 2009.
This was a birthday present for my friend Philippa Cookman, who had read one Jilly Cooper, and I was like, oh my fucking God, you've got to fucking read all of them. So I bought her the whole collection.
So can you give us the slightly less aggressive pitch?
Yeah.
Fuck it. Give us a really aggressive pitch for Jilly, like you're a sort of street Jilly Cooper hustler.
Sure.
Come in,
yay. So if you like the idea of reading aspirational novels about really posh, rich people living lavish lifestyles, and they're all fucking each other and they've all got horses, you will love Jilly Cooper. I am not into these sort of, they call them like the bonk busters. I've read others, like I've tried reading Jackie Collins, because I find Jilly Cooper books a riot. But I've never got into any others. It's always Jilly Cooper. And I think it's because there's an element of self-awareness. Like, there's an element that she's parodying the form.
Yes, she knows what she's doing. Yeah. She's sort of winking at herself in a mirror while she does it.
Yeah, she's doing something in a mirror. But the later ones, so once you get past Score, they're bad. They're not good anymore. So I don't read the new one. I don't read any after Score, which I think came out in about the late 90s.
Oh, is that right? Well, just the quality drops off.
Yeah, it really does.
Does
yeah.
it? Does it?
Really does. Yeah. It makes me feel like she had a co-writer who died or something.
There was a story about her that everyone, well, I wonder if it'll leap into everyone's heads. She was on the horrific Paddington train crash. Do you know about this?
Oh my God.
Yeah, she was on board, and I mean, obviously she survived.
Yeah.
But she left her book, her brand new book, on the train.
Yes,
she,
I did know this. Yeah.
And she started trampling back through the wreckage, trying to get back onto the fucking
train. Her manuscript.
Come, let me on.
But she was the highest paid journalist on Fleet Street, not just woman on Fleet Street. She was the highest paid journalist on Fleet Street. So she must have been a cracking writer, and I bet she's got sharp elbows. But, you know, everyone gets old and needs an editor, don't they?
Yeah, well, that's it, isn't it? You've got to have an editor. Jilly Cooper's Riders, this is Jeeds who's written this review.
Yeah.
Jilly Cooper's Riders has long been one of my favourite novels, and I finally got around to reading Polo. I have read other Jilly Cooper books, Harriet, Rivals and Jump, but I must say Polo has to be my favourite of them all.
Polo's the best one.
The book is definitely a bit of a marathon read at over 750 pages.
Yeah.
Fucking hell. But I didn't find it a slog at all. And in fact, when I got down to the last 100 pages, I was sad I was reaching the end.
Oh, Polo. I have reread Polo probably like 5 times. And you do, you get to the end, you go, oh.
No, I love that. I mean, that's hard to achieve as a writer, to actually get people to sort of, you know, indulge in your world and believe in it that much.
I didn't have the same problem with Stephen King's The Stand.
Oh, mate.
A book I enjoyed, but I got to the end of it and went, oh, thank God for that.
Yeah. Isn't The Stand the one where they all get a terrible thing on their neck, or they all get fat necks?
That's they do. Yeah, it's a, sorry, I just cracked one of my toe knuckles.
Not taking that out. I'm not editing that out. We'll keep that
You'll
in.
Hear it. Yeah, I'll do another one. Hang on.
Go on.
It won't work.
This is good ASMR now.
Yeah, it's like opposite ASMR. Yeah. Cursed ASMR. Hang on, I'll do the other foot.
Here we go.
There you go.
Oh, I love.
I'll do my hands. Yeah.
Joy! Do you ever go to a chiropractor? Have you ever had the full?
No way. That's bloody quackery.
It is quackery, isn't it? This is what they say. But yeah. I went to one because my back was bad recently.
Oh yeah.
And the hypnosis of feeling your back crack does make you think your back has got better.
I can imagine, actually, yeah. I've done it, like, when you're in the car, if you push back on the steering wheel and, like, angle your back properly, your back will go, like, boop, 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 and it does make you go, like, ah.
Yeah, you relax a bit.
Yeah.
That's a good guide to self-chiropractic.
Yeah, don't bother paying some quack.
Just sit in the car properly.
Yeah.
So Jilly Cooper, you bought for your mate in 2009.
2009,
What are you doing with your life at this point, please?
Oh, at that point, so me and Philippa were at the Royal Academy of Music doing a postgrad in musical theatre. And we were like the two naughty people on the course. Actually, there were loads of terribly behaved people on the course, but me and Philippa sort of rocked up like, all right, everybody, what's going on here then? And there was a lot of throughout the year. She was 6 foot and I'm 5'1", and we both sort of sound like this. And there was a lot of on the course tutors going, we just don't know what to do with either of you.
So was it clear from that fucking about that you were going to head in a comedy direction, or were you just naughty?
I was already doing stand-up by then.
Yeah,
like early 2009 I started doing stand-up, and then I went to the academy for a year did stand-up while I was there.
That's an interesting sort of change in direction. Why did you just to kind of, why did you, did it help your stand-up?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it was the year I spent at the academy was best year of my life. And it was very, very good for my confidence, which made it good for my stand-up, yes. I'd only been doing stand-up 6 months, though, when I went.
Right.
Yeah, we're coming up on the 12-year anniversary of me doing stand-up.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. But, yeah, the Royal Academy of Music, best year ever. I learned so much.
I'd like to go somewhere for a year that just gives me tremendous confidence.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Just the Royal Academy of Self-Confidence.
Yeah.
And just get bigged up a lot.
It's quite good as well, saying, yeah, I went to the Royal Academy of Music. People are always like, oh, right. And then cut to me rolling around on the floor of the dance studio going, ah! And like, money was going towards that. Like, I saved up a lot of money to go there.
My matey bought a toaster.
Listen, let's move on then. So 2011, you've got the confidence of a year at the Royal Academy.
Yeah,
all fucking
graduated.
About on the floor.
Yeah,
all
rolling
graduated up. And you are buying stuff in 2011. This is interesting. November 2011, coloured contact lenses.
Oh, I remember that. I wanted, at the time, my hair was dyed real super black. And my friend was watching New Girl with Zooey Deschanel. And she said, hey, if you had blue eyes, you could pull off that look. And I bought some blue contacts and I literally put them in once, looked very scary and took them straight out and then just threw them in the bin.
And that's the end of that.
Yeah. I thought it would be fun. I was like, this could be a whole new world for me. Blue-eyed Suze. And it lasted about 20 minutes.
Also, what a way to rebrand yourself. Like, it's the most, it's like the subtlest thing. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
Your eye colour, I mean, maybe people do really notice it, but I used to do a thing.
You would with me. I am pretty much like about 4/5 eye. So.
Speaking as someone who, my ability to act is based entirely on watching loads and loads of Friends and realising that the best bits were when Joey did the eyes. And then I clocked this in about 2001 and just started doing that in all my auditions and started getting loads of parts.
Yeah, they do. People go like, oh, this person can act. Yeah.
Honestly, you don't even need a year at the Royal Academy. Well, I'm going to invent the Royal Academy of just use your eyes. And try not to blow. This is Michael Caine does this in his online acting tutorials. I don't know if you've seen them.
Right. I have. Yeah, he's got that leather jacket on.
Yeah, that's it. And he's smoking.
Yeah.
And it's just your eyes. Don't blink, because that gives the editor an excuse to cut away if you blink.
Mm.
And you use your eyes well. The end.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Film is actually way more technical than theatre, because people would think like, oh, theatre's really heightened acting, whereas film's really naturalistic. Whereas film and TV, you do nothing because the camera is in your face.
If anything, you've got to sort of tell yourself that you're just a bit above all this.
Yeah.
Just kind of a bit over it. Just do nothing.
Yeah.
All right, there you are. We're giving away a lot of stuff on this podcast, Suze.
Yeah.
This is great life
free
advice.
Free info, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, giving the taxpayer back what they invested in you.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, here we go. This is a book called Incredible Sex, Brilliant Little Ideas by Marcel Perks. Whether you're single and want to get more out of your sexual encounters, or you've been married for donkeys and need to put the zing back into your lovemaking, you're holding the solution to all your sexual dilemmas. $3.99 on Kindle, mate.
Kindle?
Mm-hmm.
Was it, did you say 2011?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Was that, did it also have Stephen King's The Cell on that order?
Yes, it did.
This, right, I know what this is. Howard bought me a Kindle for Christmas.
Amazing.
He said, I've loaded on a couple of books you'll enjoy. And he put a sex book on there because he thought that would be very funny. But I did actually like Stephen King's The Cell. Yeah, that was my first two Kindle books. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, it's a good job you didn't open Stephen King's The Cell thinking that was the sex book. That
would have been like, oh, it's horrible.
This is terrifying.
Do what with a phone?
I mean, who? Okay, good. I'm glad that was a joke, because that means we can really take the piss out of this. Incredible sex. Brilliant little ideas. Who buys these fucking books?
Yeah. Who is actually, was it, did it cost money? Because quite a lot of these books would be like, you can get, people give away books for free on Kindle, don't they? So, but like, who would pay for that on a Kindle?
At $3.99, Hugo's
That's
written a review.
Crazy. This,
a great book. A great book. However, 2 months after getting this, I had a prostate paration, which negated its use.
Oh, loads of people mugging it off.
Graham, not a bad storyline. It is what it was intended to be. It is basically a story with sexual content worth a read. Really basic, lots of repetition. I mean, that's what sex is, to be fair.
Just do it again if it's good.
Marie says, I gave Incredible Sex 2 stars because I thought it was lame. Nothing in it was OMG. I got to try this. Most things were things that even most people have already thought of or are doing now.
Oh, I love. Bloody hell, love.
Nothing worse than someone who's sexually confident. You have to be sexually apologetic. Someone called Amy said, good for the shy. I imagine this book would be very good for those who are shy in the bedroom. For those like me who already have an open mind, all this book does is tell you what you already know. Putting on nice knickers will make your partner horny. Really?
These are just people showing off. They're like, hey guys, I'm an Amazon reviewer who already does loads of great stuff in the bedroom. good for you.
I'm an Amazon reviewer drowning in sex.
Yeah.
I Don't even know
glug,
why.
Glug,
here.
Glug, glug. I'm going to drown in some creme de menthe. Hang on.
Yeah, just keep going with that. I like this. First time we've had someone drinking while we record My Mate Bought a Toaster.
Hey, yeah, it's 11:30 in the morning.
Yeah, come on, mate. It's your run up for lunch. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Richard and Gretel gonna make your lives better today
if you'll subscribe to our podcast.
You know, it's all about how to get the most out of your partner.
And we're partners.
So we know all about it.
It's good. Get it wherever you want to get it, when you go and get it from your podcast place. Richard and Greta.
You know?
You know?
Oh, mama made the butter toaster. Shops just like a roller coaster. Oh, don't it feel so fine when you're buying all lovely strange things online, like books, weight sets, and posters. Come on, hear the best of the best of My Mate Bought a Toaster.
All right, Suze, let's go to 2012 now.
Okay.
I mean, we've got a charger for a Nokia. Oh, lovely stuff.
Bloody hell. Oh, God. I wish you hadn't seen that.
Oh. listen, mate, if you want me to edit that out, that I completely understand.
Oh, God, please take that. Oh, my God.
Yeah, you will have friends and family listening to this after all. Elsewhere, loads of great books. I Captured the Castle.
Oh, I was in a musical of it. So I probably went, I'm going to read the back. And then I never did.
Fine. So... in terms of being in musicals, how often do you end up in musicals? How often do you end up just doing stand-up?
Like in the last few years, I sort of gave up auditioning for musical theatre because it is a horrendous experience.
Because it's just like
I walk in the room and they're like, she's not pretty, but she's not ugly. She's not a leading lady, but she's not a pure character actress. What's a boy to do? So yeah, they'd just be like, we don't know what to do with you. So I've started collaborating quite a lot with Richard Thomas, who wrote Jerry Springer, the opera. And we are like outliers. And yeah, we hit it off and do a lot of stuff together. He's written a show called Wrong Songs, which is I sing, he plays, and he commentates. And we sing lots of long and very short songs. Musical one-liners, that kind of thing. But yeah, so I'm doing a lot
of that.
He is amazing. Yeah.
That is a good match.
And he knows everybody. He knows Chris Morris, Tracy Ullman, Stuart Lee. He knows everybody.
He's been around for years.
Yeah.
He was Mr. Jerry Springer. I mean, I remember that show when it first popped up at Edinburgh.
Yeah.
It was massive. He's a big deal. He's a genius.
He is. Yes. He is annoying. He rings me a lot.
Listen, if there's one thing it's important to do with your career, always get on someone's coattails.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Just hop on. Nothing wrong with that. 8th of May, 2012, a Gigi tin of Brazilian body hard wax.
Oh, yeah. I think I was like, I'm going to start waxing my own legs. That didn't last very long. I was like, then they're smooth for longer.
Fucking agony as well, isn't it?
It's not that bad, to be honest. It's just a pain. You have to let it grow for like 3 weeks. And then you're like, well, what's the point of this? Then you wax them and you're like, ah. And then you go, oh, lovely and smooth. For about 10 days, then it just starts growing back. And you go, well, I'll just shave them.
Yeah, yeah. Or go for the old lasers.
Oh, I can't be bothered with all that. Lasers on my legs.
Lasering hair off? What are you fucking talking about?
No, you mind. It's because I lived in a flat with I lived with the boyfriend and a couple of girls who I was at the academy with. And I think they were always like, no, wax, always wax, never shave. Never shave your legs, always wax your legs. And I was like, I will. And did it once and went, I can't be arsed with this.
Okay, good. Again, good life, great life advice.
Good life advice.
These are the things you've learned via your Amazon purchases.
Yes, it's true.
Look at this. Lovely. You've got an O Tom tick twister. for people or animals. I'm hoping this is for animals.
That's for my gross cat who comes in with like parasites dripping off him. Yeah, that was for my cat. God, that's a long time ago because that tick twister gets some use.
Does it? Is it still in use now, is it?
Oh, got to get the ticks off Freddy.
They are a night. I've taken ticks off my dog several times. Mm. Oh, and
it's
when you
disgusting, isn't it?
Well, let's take a listener through the process of taking a tick off. We've already cracked knuckles on the podcast, so things can't get more disgusting than that.
Yeah.
Because the tick is still very much alive, isn't it?
Yes.
And it's, you have to take it off very carefully in a specific way.
Yeah.
So as not to hurt the animal.
Yeah.
But you can't leave the tick's legs in.
Yeah, like it's got what is it called? Proboscis or whatever. You can't leave that in.
Oh, that's not a nice word, is it? Proboscis.
It is disgusting taking ticks off animals.
And then, the worst bit of all, you lift it off and you turn it around, and it's like a sort of woodlouse, basically.
Yeah.
You see its little fucking tick legs wriggling around.
Yeah, it's repulsive. I think that people think cats are very fastidious and clean. They don't care if they've got a tick on them, but we do, so we're more fastidious than them.
Yeah, yeah. What you're saying is cats are pricks.
They are, and they're gross, yeah.
Okay, good. All right, we've got A Night at the Opera by Queen. I don't know if you've heard of Queen. Great band.
I think they're going to be big. Keep an ear out.
Yeah. This is the 2011 remaster. You're probably a massive nerd on this. I mean, do you want to tell us exactly what went on during the remaster? Who was in charge of the digitization?
So I do a Queen podcast now with comedian John Robbins, who's, if anything, a much bigger fan than me. He knows.
Does he like Queen?
Oh,
he should really mention that. He should really bring that up in conversation.
It comes up occasionally on the podcast. he loves Queen, and he did. And I've always been like, I don't really know what the difference between the deluxe, the remasters, and the old versions are, to be honest. And then John brought it up on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. He went, I can't tell the difference. I went, oh, that's funny. Thinking, me neither.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Thank God. So, why Queen? When did you get into Queen? How did that happen, please?
It's quite boring. We had the album. We had a couple of albums and the greatest hits, obviously, in the house when I was a kid. And me and my brother, like, Queen is such a kids band in a weird way. Like, kids can get really into Queen. And songs like The Invisible Man are so fun if you're a kid.
Another One Bites the Dust. I remember that when I was a kid.
Yeah, they're like instantly sing-alongable. And because Freddie Mercury sings so high, kids can sing along and be like, I'm in the same key. And I just never got over it. I think once I started getting really into music and stuff as a teenager, like the complexities of music, and obviously I love musical theatre, and Queen are quite a theatrical show band.
They are a bit of a musical theatre show band.
Yeah. So I think like they're just tailor-made for me. I just love them.
Are they Roger tailor-made? Oh no, shit. Was it Roger Taylor or John Taylor?
Yeah, no, you're right.
Did I get it right? Roger Taylor, did I get a joke right? Yes,
you
I got a joke
did.
Right.
Hey, you Brian May used that joke again. Oh,
the Freddie Mercury's rising. No.
Nah.
I tell you what, what I've enjoyed about Queen and also musical theatre in the last sort of 10 years or so is people sort of reviewing how they think about it and realising that the genius and artistry that goes on into making this bit of culture is not throwaway and cheap and easy, but in fact, incredible. And one of the things, because I loved Queen as a kid, is for all the reasons you were just saying.
Yeah.
And I grew up in Monmouth in South Wales, which is where they recorded Bohemian Rhapsody
at
Rockfield Studios.
Oh, amazing.
And I remember finding that out when I was probably about 12 or 13, and that's when Oasis were there recording at Rock.
Yes.
And I was like, guys, I was saying to my mates, like, fuck, Bohemian Rhapsody was recorded in Monmouth. This should be one of the biggest things about our stupid little town. No one gave two hoots. Now, Suze.
Oh, they
everywhere.
Can't get enough since that bloody movie. Yeah.
Bloody movie. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Bo Rap HQ. Oh, look at this. Oh, some suntan footed tights from May 2012. Lovely stuff.
They're dance tights, I imagine, if they're suntan, because that's the colour I always get.
Okay.
Are they made by Capizio?
They bloody are.
Yeah,
I'm
a long-term Capizio wearer for dance. Not that I've had to buy dance tights recently, but yeah.
Sure. Capizio, if you're listening, get in touch with Suze.
This girl sure likes to wear a hole in the bottom of her capesios.
You should talk. What is like a dance tight? Is it a thicker? Does that offer
they're,
a thicker
they're
tight?
Yeah, they're basically like opaque tights, but they're nude colour. So yeah, they're like leggings, but they're tights. Okay. And they're the colour of your skin.
Very nice, very nice. Yeah. Tights the colour of your skin. I mean, what you could also do is just have the colour of your skin. I mean, that's just...
That's true. Yeah, but then then I've got all my gymnastic scars all up my legs.
What are gymnastic scars?
Yeah, just falling off shit because you're a kid and you're shit at gymnastics. I was terrible at gymnastics and I persevered for 5 years. But I was always falling and completely fearless. Fall, completely rip all the skin off my shin and I've got scars.
Really?
Yeah, still got the scars.
Were you sort of pushing yourself into that? Was this like a parent's, come on, you've got to be in gymnastics?
No, I wanted to be a gymnast. I wanted to be an Olympic gymnast. I saw gymnastics at the Atlanta Olympics in 96 when I was 11. Mm. And I went, because I wanted to go when I was a little kid, but my parents were like, we're not paying for that, you're out of your mind. And so I was 11. I said, I want to go to gymnastics. I really, really, I think that I could be an Olympic gymnast like those girls on the TV. So my parents were like, oh, you find a gymnastics club and you can go. And I found one. I had to ring them up myself and go, I want to do gymnastics. They were like, how old are you? I said, I am 11. And they did say on the phone, like, that's very late to start gymnastics. And I was like, I don't care. I can do anything. And I was just in classes with like 7-year-olds and I was dog shit at it. And I was there for 5 years. Now, the thing is, I'm saying like, oh, I'm terrible at it. I can still do some of the stuff that I did at gymnastics. Obviously, I can't do splits anymore or stuff, but I can still do decent round off. I can still do stuff on the beam, on the bars, because, you know, you still take it on board. However, I was bad for a gymnast. So I was like a bad gymnast in the same way as I'm good for someone who can't play the piano at piano, but I'm a bad pianist. So, yeah. I just had no natural aptitude for gymnastics and I'd started really late.
But this is fascinating. This sort of, this self-motivation, that's a really big deal. You're phoning the gymnastic club up yourself. Hello.
Yeah. Well, my parents still had to pay for it. I was 11, but I don't think it was I don't think it was very expensive either. I think, again, we're in like massive subsidies. National Lottery. That's what was paying for that.
Right.
The National Lottery. So I remember it not being very expensive. And the facilities were amazing. They're all brand new from the National Lottery.
Wow. I love that. I love that you saw that on telly and thought, that's the one.
I wanted it. I was like, I want to be an Olympic gymnast. And my mum was, hey, it wasn't like there was support or lack of support. It was just my mum going, oh, okay.
But if there's ever anything that prepares you for the life we've chosen in stand-up, it is to follow your dreams in the teeth of evidence that it's not working.
Yes! Like they said, they would go, you're very strong and very stiff. They would tell me that. And they were like, it's just because you started late. And I'm going, yeah, don't worry about it. Don't worry. And I would work all week because it was on Saturday mornings. I would work hard all week on my flexibility. Like, oh, they're going to wow them one day with, and they'd have the local, you know, the county competitions. And obviously I was never on the team, but I'd go along to the competitions just to help out. It's really pathetic. I was like, shows willing.
It's adorable. I love it. It's like I don't know. I Tonya's about ice skating. There's there's a Y Tonya thing going on.
Why Tonya? Why Suze? I Tonya. I mean, what an amazing story. I think I relate to Tonya Harding for no good reason because I'm like, yeah, and she was like an outlier in her sport. Like, no, she was incredibly talented, Suze. That's the opposite of what you were.
But it's great. This is good. Okay, good. I'm learning a lot about you. I like that. I love that determination. It's fantastic. All right, let's plow on to 2013 now.
Yeah.
What have we got here? Lovely. A nice HTC Desire HD battery. I mean,
that's for the old Phonio.
Classic battery there. A Volupté Eau de Toilette spray for women. You've gone
nice.
For
that's
there.
My mum's perfume of choice. And you can't buy it in shops anymore. So you have to get it on Amazon. So about once every 3 years, I have to buy her a new bottle of Volupté.
Because mums do have to smell a certain way. They have to smell the same, don't they?
Yeah, and she's had that same perfume since I was, like, before I was born. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is much like a sort of, I guess, a bird returning to its tiny little birdlings in the nest. If your mum doesn't smell the same, you won't ever find your mum again.
Yeah, that's true. And what I've discovered in lockdown, and I believe Anna Kempner, that's her name, Anna Kempner, I believe she's discovered this too. Turns out, because I haven't worn perfume in lockdown at all, and I don't, and she hasn't either. Turns out, I wear perfume for other people, turns out.
Interesting.
During lockdown, and put it on once, not even when I've done online gigs and stuff.
Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. That is the best depiction of what lockdown has taught us all, that the amount of things that we do that we assume are part of our makeup that we do for other people.
Yeah, turns out it's all for others. Yeah.
Fuck, I love that. So here's the key question then. Yeah. When you revert to real life, as and when that happens, will you start to, you know, before you go out again?
Yeah,
like, no,
little
fuck
spritz.
Them. Yeah. Let them smell the pits.
Absolutely. I did it because when they briefly opened up gigs sort of end of November into December, when I had a gig, if it was a dressy one, I'd be like, oh, I've got a spritz on some perfume. Otherwise, the whole look is not complete.
Yeah, exactly. The look, i.e. the smell. Okay, good. So literally the only thing you smell of now is creme de menthe. That is it.
Yes. And it's lovely. And I'm going to have a little bit more.
Just have a little go on that.
A little bit of creme de menthe.
You have a go at that while a random man goes through your Amazon purchase history.
What have I become?
November 2013, the Breaking Bad official calendar. Love that.
Oh, yeah. We're probably into like a lot of Christmas gifts now.
Yeah.
So that was probably a Christmas gift for somebody.
Nice to see the Breaking Bad calendar. That's one for the kids, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
There's Walter White dying of lung cancer. happy March.
Enjoy.
Yeah. A JML bobble off handheld electrical lint remover.
That is one of the best things I've ever bought in my life. So I am a charity shop fiend. I've missed those in lockdown. And on a charity shop, head for the sale rail. I have found some amazing stuff on there, and it's like a lot of terribly bobbled knitwear, but like Abercrombie & Fitch Angora cardigan. It was £1 on the sale rail.
What?
It was more bobble than cardi, and I bought it. I took it home. I debobbled it for about 20 minutes. It looked like brand new.
And it cost you how much? A quid?
Fucking quid, mate. Not even any postage, because I didn't have to get it posted.
That is what Mick Jagger charity shopping would sound like.
Do you like my bubble cardi? I can get all bubbles off this.
Oh, God, I'm enjoying that far too much. It's really pleasing. It's true, though. It's true. You've got to get the bubbles off. I think charity shops, my mum's worked in a charity shop for years, and the stories she tells, you know, it's like someone she knows, if she knows a posh person in her hometown has died recently, then it's almost like that's the epicenter of a tidal wave of expensive shit that's about to hit her shop. And she braces herself for the boxes to arrive, and then she goes through it. She fucking loves it. If you are into hoarding and kind of people archaeology, you doesn't get better than a good charity shop.
It's true. And because it's cheap, you're like, I'm making money. You're still spending it.
They're going to be absolutely rammed as well after lockdown. Oh, we've got so much stuff to get rid of.
There's
so
going to be a lot, and everyone's gained weight in lockdown.
Yes.
So people are going to be like, oh, I got to get rid of all my old clothes because I can't fit in them because of lockdown. And guess who'll go in to scoop them up? A certain little impish creature who runs in and goes, oh, just my size. And it's me. And I'll get my debobbler and go, it's so good.
You've already said you're 5'1", and I've now got an image of you. You know when E.T. puts on the costumes and E.T. shuffles off?
That's a film about me.
I love that movie.
And I've got eyes like E.T.
Not blue, though. Not blue.
No, exactly. That plan was scuppered by fear.
There's so many great things on your purchase history. I'm so glad I got you on. This is just brilliant. Steampunk flip-up lens sunglasses. You got these in June 2014.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. That was for a Tim Burton-themed birthday party. So brilliant. I bought them. I remember buying them. And I never wore them again. And they're really good. I'm looking around where they might be.
Okay, good. Well, this is, again, a part of this podcast is for people to remember, you know, whether it's bobblers or flip-up sunglasses that they have loved and lost.
That's it, yeah.
Oh, here we go. Look, Helios, a mini bulldog clip, pack of two. I love a bulldog clip.
I remember what they were for as well. Wow, this is like, I can literally remember what everything was for. That was, I was selling a load of stuff on eBay and I bought a plastic, I might have bought the plastic dummy on eBay, but you buy like a half dress form. So I might have bought that on eBay, not Amazon. And you put the clothes on it and you clip them to the back so they fit the dress form perfectly.
Oh,
it's
nice.
An old tip. Old tip. Yeah.
Full of tips and tricks
tips,
today.
Chips. Yeah.
I used to remember playing with bulldog clips in my dad's office when I was very young and just putting them on my fingers just to experience pain.
Put them on the skin on your underarm, just like really hurts. And then your instinct is to just pull them off, and then it hurts more. You're like
stationary, so much stationary. Certainly in the 80s, was basically child torture.
Yeah, man, safety pins. Not very safe when it's stuck through the end of my finger, is it?
Boom, mate. That's straight in the set, isn't it? That's fucking great.
Safety pin. Don't think so.
call them dangerous pins.
Who's with me?
Shatterproof rulers. Think you find they do shatter?
Try smacking it on the back of Stephen Aitken's head. Stephen Aitken was a boy in my class in year four. Hit him with a ruler.
And did it shatter?
Did not, soft-brained fool.
Fucking hell. Stephen, of course, never walked again.
No, I'm sorry about that.
Hidden fashion, women's ladies, flat-form lace-up canvas pumps. Lovely green. Oh, I like these, Sue.
I know them. They were because my first Edinburgh show was called Defying Gravity, and it was about me wanting to be in Wicked and also about my parents' divorce. I linked the two together.
And showbiz coming together.
Yeah, pow, pow, pow. And I wore green shoes for the show.
Fantastic. I mean, one of the great pleasures of doing Edinburgh, we talk about Edinburgh a lot on this podcast, is the demise of your costume over the course of the month. To the point where if anyone is going to Edinburgh, as and when it starts up again, do be warned, people stink by the end of the month.
Yeah, I did Nick Helm's I Think You Stink at the 2019 Edinburgh, the last Edinburgh that took place, which is his B-movie horror pastiche musical. It's really good. I was in that, and he's the devil in the last part of the show. He comes out as Satan, and he wore like a red lycra, just, you know, leotard, long arms, long legs leotard. And it did get to the point where we were like, Nick, you gonna wash that costume? And he was like, oh, we're nearly done.
We're not nearly done. We've got 2 weeks left, Nick. 2 weeks left. You now smell like the devil as well as I like it. Oh, so good. Nick was on this podcast and he was fantastic.
Oh, I bet he was so funny. I bet his Amazon purchases are insane.
I mean, signed pictures of Pamela Anderson. Do check it out. Series 2 of My Mate Bought a Toaster. Of course, available completely ad-free on Patreon.
Patreon.com/ToasterPod.
Look, 2014, ladies' cat hooded all-in-one, blue SM, I think that means small medium, not sadomasochist, nightwear sleep jumpsuit.
Blue? I love it. Cat hooded.
You've dressed as a cat, Suze.
I definitely don't remember that at all. Having said I remember everything, I would have remembered. Maybe
it's just above gaffer tape as well, which is unknown.
Maybe it was to dress a victim in that I then gaffer taped up. I don't remember buying a... What, did it have like cat ears? What's it look
yeah,
like?
Yeah, it's got cat ears. It's just a onesie. It's just a onesie that's got cat ears on the bit.
No, absolutely no memory of that. It must have been for somebody else.
Well, listen, November 2014, it's very showbiz. You've got things like an old age pensioner curly grey wig, Smithy's 60s beehive wig. Of course, you've got the Sonic the Hedgehog plush Sonic hat. We've all been
Has had a bit of use in the years since for posters and that. I'll tell you what them wigs were for. That's because for my mum's Christmas present that year, me and my brother did a half hour sketch pilot for her.
What?
Were you kids? No, I was 29. My brother was 27. But we were like, oh, she'll love this. But we're like all playing different people to do like friends of the family and stuff.
So we should say, so Luke is your brother, right?
Yeah.
So he is also a very accomplished comic as well.
Yeah, right? He's much more successful than me.
So basically your mum has got, you know, these two guys putting on her own.
Yeah, we did a pilot for her.
Where is it, please? Can we see it?
No, what? No one can ever see it.
Mate.
Because we're like doing impressions of friends of the family. It's just for my mum.
I think there's something in this. If any commissioners are listening, genuinely, if you did a series of sketch shows that people have made just for their family.
Yeah, we'd have to redo it because there's no way that could go out. It's libelous. But yeah, we did that. But like at various points, we show up in the sketch show as my mum. So there was a short blonde wig for my mum. And we like we just put on her coat and would sit with a laptop like we're watching the sketches. So it would cut to me or my brother as my mum going, "Oh, that's horrible," and stuff.
Fuck, this is deviously meta. This is a sketch show that's eating itself and I love it. Oh my God.
Some of it was like we reenacted things that actually had happened in our family's history, like over the years. And we took turns playing different people and we had a great time. We shot it in like 6 hours.
Can I just say, I need to see this. This is the first thing I need to say. Secondly, right, even if I need, I've got your password for your Amazon account. I must be able to use that. It must be on a Dropbox somewhere. Can I just say, as an idea, an Edinburgh show, right, that is siblings putting on a sketch show for their imagined mum sitting in the audience.
Yeah.
That is a genius idea. Okay.
Fighting. Yeah.
Yeah, and just fighting and just but doing sketches for stories that you assume the fictional mum in the audience knows already and like,
yeah.
I don't know, just pretending the audience is your mum and it's just her. That is
good. It is an idea, isn't it? I'll pitch it to my brother. We had the idea last year that because we've never done anything together like ever. We a few things over the years, but nothing proper. And we had the idea last year to run a siblings pub quiz in Edinburgh in like one of the Gilded Balloon rooms or something. But the problem is like my brother's younger than me, but I feel bad for him because I'm quite anarchic on stage and will derail things quite a lot. You can see why he's more successful than me. So like, I think it would have been an awful lot of me like going, but we probably still will do this Edinburgh pub quiz idea again.
It's a great idea. I just can't believe you're older than him. You shouldn't be the big annoying show off.
No, also, I think it's because like I'm a girl and girls are supposed to behave a certain way. And I'm like, oh, really?
Good. Quite right too.
Capering.
Listen, Suze, I could talk to you all day, but we need to crack on.
Okay,
right?
sorry.
So, sorry. That's technically not your fault, although, you know, you are 50%.
It is a bit my fault.
Responsible for a lot of the talking that's happened. So here's what we're going to do, right?
Okay.
Also, because if you think you're a derailer, I'm a derailer as well, which is why no point has this episode been on the rails.
When our powers combine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, so what we're going to do, Suze, I'm just going to do like an ultra quick browse through loads of stuff.
Okay.
Right? So quick answers.
Yeah.
Okay? So 2016, what have we got? Barry M Cosmetics Moisturising Lip Paint Cranberry Red. Hello.
Good colour. I've used that colour a lot and it is for a character I do called Philidia and she always wears cranberry red Barry M.
Love it. She's straight out of a Jilly Cooper book.
Brilliant. Yes, she is.
Spider X Aerosol Spray, 4th of September 2016.
Spiders are scary. Spray your rooms.
Right, okay, do you do a preemptive strike on the spiders?
Yeah, every September. When they come out to bone, I spray all of my rooms so they don't want to have sex in there.
There'll be no fucking in here. What you should do, actually, just put pictures of the spider's parents on the walls and then they'll be too awkward to fucking know.
Yeah. Oh, good luck, guys.
Women's running fitness top removable padded sports bra, 4th of January 2017 now.
Yeah, always get, when you buy a sports bra, doesn't matter how big your knockers are, always buy one with removable pads because then leave the pads in. They soak up the sweat. It's more support. You'll have a great time. I have discovered, this is TMI, but I have discovered that through all the times I've tried wearing stick-on bras, I've done those where you buy the silicone stick-on bra, they don't do anything. Like, unless you've got no boobs at all, they're not going to do anything. They're just like a bump under your clothes. Just go without. Ladies, ditch the bra if you're going out in a top that requires a low back.
So hang on. So, but what about the support? Because that's the problem, isn't it? There's the whole joke about two black eyes when you run. If you've got
if you're running, you want a little support. Not that I've got like gigantic knockaroos or anything, but like the removable pads, discovering that they add a whole new level of support and they stop your sweat being so gross.
This is absolutely genius, fucking brilliant. Spiders, fucking tit sweat. 10th of February 2017, Ivy Black Sticky Dots.
Oh, I know what they were for. That was because in my 2017 Edinburgh show, originally I was going to get someone up from the audience to be Robert De Niro, and then I was going to stick a mole on them. And I abandoned it very quickly because people in the audience were just like, what the fuck are you doing? But yeah, that's what those dots were for.
That's great. I love it. Can you not stick that on my face, please?
It was more the people on stage would be like, oh, that's fine. But the people in the audience would be like, and what?
That's great. I love confusing an audience. All right, here we go. We're into 2020 now. We're going to come charging into the present series. Wow. Let's have a look at your 2020. 192.
Yeah. Oh, items. God. Okay.
3rd of January 2021, actually. Mm. This is one of the latest things you bought.
Yeah.
This is a lovely New Year's present for yourself. £20 on the pulse oximeter fingertip blood oxygen monitor.
Guess who got COVID? Oh. Me and then Anna Kempner, who I live with, because Luke Kempner gets to live in a house on his own. I get to live with Mummy. So I got COVID at the last gig that was allowed to take place on December 15th.
Absolute
super spreader event. Everybody got it. And I got it, and it wasn't very nice, but it wasn't the worst. My mum got it, and it was like, oh, fucking hell, ambulance on standby time. I got an oximeter, and her blood oxygen was quite low, but she pulled through and now she's downstairs crying.
Wow. But those oximeters, a friend of mine got COVID and he bought one of those as well because it does give you a bit of security because you can panic, can't you?
Yeah.
You can think that your oxygen levels are dropping.
Yeah. And also my mum never got out of breath, whereas I did, and my blood oxygen was higher than hers. Right. So it shows like you can be, but she couldn't get out of bed for like 2.5 weeks. It was awful. I could tell she was feeling better because on January 6th, day of the MAGA riots, remember that?
Yeah.
She was like, she stayed up all night watching them on her computer and I just sat on the end of the bed going like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And she was feeling much better. Because she stayed up watching MAGA riots.
Always a sign that you're better. You'll know you're on the mend from COVID when you watch CNN throughout the night. Tell you what, though, fuck. I mean, I hope your mum's a supporter of your career because it's literally nearly killed her.
She's a supporter of Trump.
he's very misunderstood.
She does support my career because her job is she's a professional dressage rider who's never had any money. So the idea of her going like, you can't do a stupid job. I'll be like, oh, let's talk about the dancing horses, shall we? Has it made you rich, mother? No, no, no.
Your mum is a dressage rider.
That's right. That's right.
Fuck, this is great. I absolutely, hence why they couldn't afford the singing lessons, I suppose.
I guess, yeah. It's a sport for the rich. And if you haven't got money to start with, well, don't expect to make very much.
All right. Okay. So listen, we are very much in the present now as we get towards the end of this episode of My Mate Bought a Toaster. Suze, this has been a delight. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you.
Have bought some raspberry flavoured vodka.
Yay! Buy it again!
There it is, mate. Buy it again.
I feel like I should buy something now on Amazon so it'll pop up and you can be like, oh, she's bought something.
The latest thing. Live shopping. look at this. February 2021, you've gone for some Bostik white blue tack. Well, it's not blue tack, is it? It's white tack, please.
It's white tack. Mm. I wanted it to match the colour of Michael Jackson as he died. That's what... Because I saw Michael Jackson. Do you know this?
What?
I saw him in 2009, 2 months before he died. I was working as a dog handler on Oliver on the West End. And what musical could draw a man who enjoys the company of boys? Oliver. Wow. He came and he did a backstage tour. Let me tell you, he had no interest in meeting the dog or the dog handler, but he certainly wanted to meet 30 little cast members. So anyway, but he then... I thought, because, to be honest, I have always thought, yeah, he did it.
Yeah. So obviously when he was walking, of course he did. Those interviews that came out last year were harrowing.
But this is like,
God, it was because I work on Magic and we used to play him all the time on Magic, and I emailed my boss at Magic that evening and said, I'm never playing another Michael Jackson.
I always thought he did it, but I would still sing at weddings like "Don't Blame It on the Sunshine," and you go, yeah, everyone loves it, and I went, oh, I just don't. It doesn't feel right singing the way you make me feel anymore when you imagine him singing it to like a boy.
So are you cranking this up for comedic effect, or was he genuinely like, okay, can I have a look at the changing facilities now?
He wasn't like that, but he really, he had handlers with him. Yeah. He didn't look all there, and he said, I want to meet Oliver and Dodger. And they were trying to advise him against it, but they were saying the show's about to start. The show was held up by a lot because he wouldn't take his seat. He kept standing up and waving to everybody. And then the streets were just packed with paparazzi, and I couldn't get out, and I ended up getting stuck right next to him coming out of the theatre. But every time I saw him, I just thought, you look like white blue tack.
Oh my God. I can't believe white tack, the final item of today's episode, has led to such a revelatory story about Michael Jackson.
Yeah, it was crazy. And then 2 months later, he was dead.
Mate, you were... So in the last few seconds, your mum was a dressage rider. Yeah. She nearly died of COVID. And you were a dog handler who met Michael Jackson, who was trying to meet small boys backstage. I call that a wrap.
I think we'll leave that right there.
I would drop the mic, but it's very expensive. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, don't do that.
Suze, you're absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for doing this
Thanks
podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. I think you're so fucking funny. You are so, so
well,
great
you.
On this, but on Twitter as well. I think you're brilliant. And what
thank
is your Twitter
you.
Handle, please?
@SuzeUK, SoozUK.
Okay, very good indeed. Suze, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, Tom. Bye.
Have a good one. Bye, bye, bye. His name no more. I want... Say no more. If you love me really, baby, don't walk out that back door. Suze Kempner, my personal queen of Twitter. All hail the Kempnertron, as I'm now calling her dubiously. Thank you very much for listening. I've got to say a big hello to Alison, who tweeted us this week at ToasterPod on Twitter. And she was extremely nice. She said, I won't lie, ToasterPod is the only podcast I actually bother to finish episodes for. Which I assume no one's listening to this bit. So I really could go on and on for ages, because once the guest is gone, why are you still here? Alison, it's very kind. I know it's because you're waiting for the theme tune at the end. I understand that. I know what I'm here for. I'm talking over the theme tune. It's annoying. Anyway, Alison, thank you very much indeed for your lovely tweet. And thank you to everyone who is following us on Patreon. Next week's episode is Nina Conti. That is now going up today on Patreon. So if you want to get your ears around next week's episode ad-free, exclusively early, head over to patreon.com/toasterpod. From as little as £3 a month, it's next to nothing, £3. And it just, if a whole bunch of you gives us that, it makes such a massive difference to the whole production. So thank you very much indeed to people who found time to do that. patreon.com/toasterpod, and you can give us a hand over there and get your ears around Nina Conti, which is up next. Anyway, that's it for today. Back to the music, I guess, for a little bit.
GreatBigOwl.com.
It's an S-Pod thing. The podcast revisiting S Club 7's insane TV show.
Yeah, I can't imagine anyone's binge-watched this. Anyone who's not on drugs.
Thank you for bringing this into my life. It was honestly truly appalling.
Guests helped me analyse the show in more detail than anyone ever asked for.
It feels weird to me to say the phrase sex object in a show that was aimed at six-year-olds.
Do you think this is one of the problems with the show is that 7 is too much?
It's an S-Pod thing from Great Big Owl.